What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take, and look who is back. Max Kellerman in the flesh. Good to see you. Stephen A. Smith, I'm Molly Karam Rose. Guys, NBA's in full swing. Let's get after it. The Lakers were in action last night. They got their first convincing win of the restart, taking down the Jazz by 8. The Lakers clinched the division title and top seed in the West for first time in a decade, ending their 5-year playoff drought. Anthony Davis put up 42, 12, and 14. AD, talk to me.
We're just reaching about milestones. No one knew before the game, like players lost. You know, we never talked about it, but to do something like that, you know, it's been a long time coming for the Laker Nation. And you know, we just go out there and shot to play. We're trying to be the best version of the team that we can be. And you know, like I said, it's a good feeling. You know, obviously we're not done. We still got a long way to go, but it's a good accomplishment for our organization.
Stephen A., you still worried about those Lakers?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Number one, because that number one seed means absolutely nothing because it's to ensure home court advantage. And obviously because of the situation involving a global pandemic and the fact that they've got a bubble in Orlando, there is no home court advantage. That's number one. Number two, Avery Bradley, I got to give props to my man Jalen Rose that mentioned this weeks ago when Avery Bradley first signed off by saying that, you know what, he wasn't going to join the Lakers in the bubble because he's got a 6-year-old with respiratory issues that he was very, very concerned about and elected not to join the team. So as a result, you've got an elite on-ball defender that's gone from you. Rondo goes down hurt. He's out. And then I'm looking at the rest of these guys right now. And from a defensive perspective, in terms of their size on the front line and the interior, the Lakers obviously are formidable. But I watched Donovan Mitchell, even though he didn't shoot that great en route to scoring 33 points last night, he was able to get where he wanted, when he wanted. And I'm thinking about a team like the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm thinking about a team like the Houston Rockets. And I'm like, what are you going to do to defend against those guys? Alex Caruso and Dion Waiters, who I like, and others. That's not going to get it done against those teams. So I do have reasons for concern. And last but not least, I look at a guy like Anthony Davis, who's clearly been the best Laker thus far since the return, even though LeBron's been doing his thing as well. But him being aggressive, getting to the free throw line for 15 free throw attempts last night, it's not about the points that he scores, it's how he does it. If he maintains that level of aggression, that's going to offset some of the things that the opposition is going to throw his way once competition intensifies. But the question is he going to be able to be as aggressive going to the basket against those other teams as he was last night against Utah, particularly against the Los Angeles Clippers? I'm not so sure about that. So, again, I haven't jumped off the bandwagon, but I'm very, very, very concerned for the Los Angeles Lakers because I think LeBron and AD are going to be who they are. I don't know if that's going to be enough. Somebody else is going to have to step up, and I'm looking for that other person, Max, and I haven't seen it as of yet. Again, it's early. They were going for 4.5 months or so. They're just warming up. We'll see, but I haven't seen that person yet.
You don't have to worry about the Lakers getting to the Western Conference Finals. I mean, more than you have to worry about any team in a given year who's supposed to be elite getting to the Conference Finals. There can always be an upset, but I think the Lakers are going to get there because they have two of the best half dozen players in the world on the same team. And let's not start making excuses in advance for the Lakers. They ain't going to beat the Clippers. And they ain't going to beat the Clippers. Not only I said this originally when it happened, because the Clippers basically parachuted the best player in the world in Kawhi Leonard and another guy who was in the MVP hunt before he got hurt, Paul George, onto a 48-win team. LeBron and AD are on a team that has to really build up from nothing because LeBron got hurt before the playoffs last year, right? So they didn't make the playoffs. So the Lakers are an excellent powerhouse team. There's no doubt about that. Clippers are just better. They're better constructed, and they have the, you know, Kawhi Leonard. But I want to talk about the Lakers right now. Anthony Davis, you see, when you have a four, a two-way four, guy who can play on both ends of the floor, who's also a shot blocker, a shot-blocking two-way four, that's when you talk about the greatest power forwards of all time, and you know, respect to Charles Barkley and Karl Malone, but the reason they're power forwards is because they can't take wings off the dribble consistently. Really, otherwise they'd be wings. And the reason they're not centers is because they're not rim protectors, right? But when you look at the best who ever did it, and again, apologies to say Kevin Garnett, but I think obviously that guy is Tim Duncan. Anthony Davis is the first guy to come along, you say, that guy could challenge Tim Duncan as the best who ever did it at the position. He is so dominant both ends of the floor. His offense has been superb, but his defense has been bananas. You know, and if you have that guy on your team playing the big, whatever you want to call that, the four or the five, and you have LeBron James basically playing the point guard, you're going to beat the Utahs and Denvers of the world. That's what the history of the NBA says. They're going to fall to the team with the best two-way wings in their primes, Kawhi and Paul George, but they're going to beat everybody else, Stephen A.
Well, listen, here's the thing. We could talk about excuses all we want to, but the reality of the situation is let's rewind the clock a little bit. Even with the Clippers assembling who they assembled, to use your words, parachuting in two of the best players in the world on a 48-win team, I still picked the Lakers, and here's why. Because when you looked at Avery Bradley with a Rondo, with a LeBron, with an Anthony Davis and some of the supplementary parts, my attitude is that if you're the Clippers, first of all, you know, chemistry is going to be an issue because you're going to engage in load management with Kawhi. I'm talking about what our thoughts were at the beginning of the season. You're going to engage in load management as it pertained to Kawhi. Paul George had his surgery. He had to reacclimate himself into things. They weren't going to be on the floor, but so much. Then you had to concern yourself with too many basketballs because of the other pieces that they acquired. Montrezl Harrell looking for a new contract, et cetera, et cetera. All of these things factored into the equation. So you thought about it and you said, the Lakers match up pretty well with the Clippers, just like the Clippers match up pretty well with them. It's going to come down to who has a better regular season, who has home court advantage, even though they're both in L.A. We'll see where that goes. I still put my money on LeBron and AD under those circumstances. What has happened because of the bubble is that you no longer have to concern yourself with load management with Kawhi Leonard because you've been going for 4.5 months. There's only 8 regular season games to go before the playoffs begin. If you remember last year, even though he only played 60 of the 82 games for Toronto, come playoff time, he averaged 39 minutes per game. He led everybody in minutes played in the postseason last year. So we know what he's getting geared for, and you don't have to worry about load management. Plus that time allotted Paul George to get fully healthy, et cetera, et cetera. And then you combine that with two of your guards for the Lakers being gone, the onus being placed on LeBron James. Then you look at a team like Houston. Maybe they'd play the Clippers in the second round. Maybe they'd play the Lakers. We don't know as of yet. We'll see how that pans out. But you're looking at Russell Westbrook suddenly veer away from attempting three-pointers, and he's attacking the basket with fervor. He's kicking it out to open shooters. Mike D'Antoni changed because they traded Clint Capella. They've gone small. They got Covington in that lineup. They got Gerald Green back with Harden, with Westbrook, with House, and all of these boys. And all of a sudden, Houston is a completely different team than they were at the beginning of the season. So it's not about an excuse is all I'm trying to say, Max. We're allowed to sit up there and look at the changes that took place because of the pandemic and modify our thinking to some degree. That's why I say I'm concerned.
But look, if coming back to the bubble, the Clippers were missing Patrick Beverley and someone else. Yeah, I would also say, wait a minute, it was close between the Lakers and the Clippers, and this could tip the scales. But one of my my thought process, my reasoning, why I one of them, several, that I like the Clippers over the Lakers. I'm going to keep it to Clippers and Lakers right now. We know the Rockets have a puncher's chance this season, as they normally do. But the Lakers, you look at the way they're assembled, and I think next year they'll have a better chance than this year. Because usually when you put those stars together, you have to use so many resources that you can't get the details right. They lucked up. And also skill in the front office with Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley, right? But the Lakers were going to rely on the chemistry being just right, on LeBron getting the team firing on all cylinders just at the right time. Whereas what teams really do well in the playoffs traditionally, those ISO half-court teams like the Clippers with superstars, two wing players who play in that style team, that half-court ISO, and we're going to defend the wings team. That's traditionally the quickest kind of formula. The one that relies least on chemistry, that's what the Clippers have.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com. Meanwhile, according to our Jake Trotter, Odell Beckham Jr. will not opt out of the season, despite some very strong words in a recent Wall Street Journal article. The Brown Star wideout said the following, quote, "We're not ready for football season, so why are we trying to push forward? It's obviously for the money, and that bothers me because there's always been this, and I hate saying it like that, but the owner's attitude is, oh, we own you guys. And just kind of that unfairness going on that they don't see us as human. I just feel like the season shouldn't happen, and I'm prepared for it not to happen, and I wouldn't mind not having it." On that note, we bring in our quarterback, Timothy Hasselbeck. Tim, always good to see you. Max, I'll start with you on this one. Odell Beckham is set to make $14 million this season. How do his comments make the NFL look?
Makes him look bad. And not only that, in a way, unserious. One of the reasons that the NBA, I think, was able to create the situation they have now, which is it looks likely, I'm cautiously optimistic, that they'll actually crown a champion. Now, I can't, you know, you have to admit, most of their season was played, right? So they want that local TV money, they play another 7 or 8 games, and then they go right to the playoffs. But they have a long playoff season. You know, the entire NFL season, if done properly, could fit into the NBA, almost into the NBA playoff season. But one of the reasons the NBA was able to achieve something that I don't think Major League Baseball or the NFL will, namely crowning a champion, was there's much more trust between ownership in the and also commissioner in the form of Adam Silver and the players. They believe that both sides are good faith operators, good faith actors. They're negotiating in a serious way to have a season. I don't think that's the case in the NFL. Guys, we had Marquise Goodwin on, who, by the way, has been to hell and back in his personal life. You wouldn't wish what's happened in his personal life on your worst enemy, and has come out of it and faced it like a man. And on this show, I asked him, if the NFL were to propose something like, look, we can't do 16 or 17 games. It's not realistic. We could do 8 games, and we can have a couple bubbles set up, 3, 4, however many it takes, bubbles set up that you can't be with your family, because he tried to turn, well, if I could be with my family. No, you can't be with your family. You got to be away, let's say, for 10 weeks. But if you do that, you'll make it to the playoffs, and then you can visit, you know, you reset, whatever. But you have that 10-week period, let's say in an 8-week season, an 8-game season you can get in. Would you sign up for that? And he didn't rule it out. You know, that is a serious proposal. The NBA was serious about this. I don't think Major League Baseball is serious. At least I don't think the players' union was. And partly I blame that on the owners. They always are trying to pull fast ones on the players. The players don't trust them. And partly it's other stuff too, I'm sure. But at the NFL too, the owners are not realizing we have to cut our losses now. We are not. We probably will lose money this season, but let's lose as little money as possible. Let's get out ahead of this. We're not going to get 16 or 17 games in the middle of a pandemic with no vaccine, and we're not going to have bubbles and stuff. It's just not going to happen. But can we get half our games in? Can we do it like this? And if they were to come to the players with a serious proposal like that, my guess is guys like Odell Beckham Jr. would say, okay, these are good faith operators. We can try to maybe figure this out because they're being sensible. Forget about the greed and the fact that the owners see them a certain way as chattel instead of people, all that stuff. They would think that they're serious and they'd have a shot. I think Odell's comments make the NFL look bad. It highlights what they've done wrong.
First of all, listen, here's my position. I don't agree with Odell Beckham Jr. And to be honest with you, Max, I'm a bit annoyed by what he had to say. Listen, first of all, Odell Beckham Jr. is guaranteed $16.75 million for this upcoming season, on top of the $2.75 million from his 2020 base salary. That's a guarantee of $19.5 million for this upcoming season. And that's while he's in the midst of a five-year, $77 million contract. While a pandemic is going on, and despite that pandemic going on, the NFL is saying, we're conducting business, but if you don't want to play, don't play. So when you have that choice, stop bringing up stuff like, oh, it's like they own us. Because you know what he's alluding to when you're saying that. And there's a time and a place for it. And more importantly, there's a sequence or there is a particular incident or whatever the case may be that comes into play where that's a bit more apropos. It's a bit more applicable. Okay? Not when you're an NFL player who's making millions and has been given the right to walk away for the season. The NFL is choosing to conduct business. They have made it clear. We would like to know we would like to know sooner than later if you elect not to play. But you do have the choice not to play, and you're not going to lose your contract for it. It's just that you're not going to get paid for this season that you choose not to participate in. It's very, very simple. Last time I checked, that's freedom of choice. So how are you going to go and do an interview with the Wall Street Journal and say, I don't even think we should be playing, but in the same breath saying, oh, I'm going to play. Well, make up your damn mind. Are you going on principle and you feel this way, or do you not? And oh, by the way, listen, I'm a black man. When you're going to bring up race, make it count, please. Could you make it count? That's all I ask. Make it count. Something like this, because they're having the NFL, who employs you, okay, is choosing to have a season. By the way, you're choosing to have that, to play in that season. You got your hand out for your check, right? But in the same breath, you're going to complain about the season that you've elected to participate in, knowing you're going to get paid for it? What type of damn sense does that make? It makes no sense whatsoever. And when you bring up race in this equation, a white guy like you, Max, a white guy like you, Tim, or white folks all across the nation, they sit up there and all of a sudden, you sit up there and go like this, what is this? Because this ain't what we've been talking about here. This is not what the protests have been about. The protests have been about racial oppression, racial inequality, things of that nature. That isn't applicable to you in this sequence, Odell Beckham Jr., or any other NFL player. You have the choice to play and get paid, or don't play and don't get paid. It's a choice. And if it's a choice, guess what? You made it. Made it. Don't make it and whine. I tell people this all the time, Max. If you got a problem, we can talk about it. You got two choices. Let's resolve it or let's not resolve it and be on our merry way. What you're not going to do is be in my face saying you accept the circumstances, but you're moaning about it too. You don't get to do both. And that's what Odell Beckham Jr. is doing here. With all due respect, OBJ, play or don't play. It's very simple.
Look, I think there's a lot in his statements in this interview, and when I start off looking at it, I think when he starts to voice the concerns, like, those are legitimate, and we've seen it with players, guys deciding to opt out. Like, the concern for your health and safety, as well as the health and safety around you, you can care about that, and you should care about it, and people obviously do, and Odell should be no different than anybody else in that regard. But I think to say that, you know, really the two things that stuck out to me, and it's clear they stuck out to you, Stephen A., is that, you know, that idea that, you know, hey, owners think we own you guys, or, you know, saying they don't see us as human when, like, clearly they are spending all types of resources to try to make these facilities as safe as possible. And Max, I would push back a little bit in terms of the idea that the NFLPA and that the NFL owners weren't negotiating on trying to come up with a solution. you know, with good intentions. I think they actually came to an agreement fairly quickly when you consider the size of the rosters, the operations that it takes to run a training camp, to get to a season, all of that stuff. And are the owners trying to protect their businesses and stay open and have football? Yes, but so are the players. Look, less than 2% of the players have decided to opt out. They want to play and get paid as well. You know, in some ways, it's like restaurants right now. Like, restaurants want to stay open. They want to keep their businesses alive. And many of their employees are fine doing takeout because they want to stay employed. Like, that's the same thing on a different scale is going on in the NFL right now. So to kind of bring this up where, you know, you're not seen as human, like, that's not the case. You're seen as labor. Yes, for sure. You're definitely seen as that. It's a transactional relationship. You know, that is true, but they don't see you as less than human. They're trying to create a safe environment for the players.
I think both of your points are well taken and persuasively argued. Stephen, I want to start with yours. I agree that diluting a racial message of justice is never a good idea. And it's an easy kind of message to fall back on if you're kind of grasping at straws or not truly able to articulate what you mean. And that Odell does seem a bit hypocritical or at least emotional and not really thought out in his arguments when he says, they don't see us as human, but I'm going to play the season. I do agree with that. And Tim, I do think also that restaurants want to stay open like the NFL wants to stay open. My point in talking about the lack of seriousness in the NFL is the restaurants are a good analogy. They want to stay open, so they go to takeout. They want to stay open, so they have outdoor seating, and you have to seat at a distance. They want to stay open, so they don't let more than four people in a store at a time. In other words, they've really made changes to their business in order to stay open. And even then, who knows if that's going to be enough long term, like when the cold weather comes and flu season comes. But they've made serious changes. The NFL, when you look at it, is still decentralized, right? Like everyone's going to play in their own cities. They're still going to play a full slate of games. It doesn't seem to me to be a serious plan to get to the end of a season and crown a champion. And I think if this is the option, play the entire thing or don't play at all, maybe some players like Odell will say, okay, fine, well, I'll play this whole thing. But if there was a better option, and I'm not mincing words, I think it's clearly a better option. I think the option in front of everyone now is foolish and will never work. I give it a 0% chance of working. If the option was eight games, Max, in bubbles, 10 weeks away from your family, et cetera, et cetera, I think players like Odell would be appeased to a much greater degree than they are right now.
With all due respect, the hell with his appeasement. Let's cut the mustard here, right? First of all, let's understand, Max, the season begins in a little over a month. We are learning new things every day about the coronavirus pandemic. It is entirely possible. I'm not saying definitive because I don't know, but it is entirely possible that the NFL, in concert with the Players Association, is trying to wait as long as it possibly can get away with waiting before they implement a hard and fast policy. They have the luxury of being able to potentially wait until then, whereas Major League Baseball had to move earlier. If the NBA wanted to restart, it had to move earlier. If the National Hockey League wanted to move, they had to act earlier because their regular season didn't start in September, or their season restart in the NBA's case. It wasn't going to be in September. So the NFL might very well be taking that approach. That's number one. Number two, we're hearing NFL players talk about, you know what, safety protocols. We all been preaching about that. You are, yourself, Max, me, Tim, everybody. We've been preaching about the importance of safety, every safety measure, every safety call imaginable being implemented. We get all of that. But the players themselves, you can't have it all. The Players Association are privately telling people that. You can't have it all. Tim just articulated that less than 2% of the players elected not to play. Well, guess what? You know what? If you're at training camp or you got the season ongoing, you know where you can really, really be safe, Max? You agree to stay away from your family. Now, that's a hard call. That's a hard call. But if you were in the NFL facility and you were on lockdown with that and you didn't go to your family, then you wouldn't have to be worried about your family's welfare, would you? But obviously, that's not a sacrifice you want to make for very, very understandable reasons. As a result, the NFL is trying to work around your sacrifices because they recognize that they're not adroit here. They haven't done everything right. We understand that. But because it's mobile, everything is changing from day to day. We understand we have never dealt with this in our lifetime. This is the worst situation since 1918, for crying out loud. It's new to everybody. So if you understand that and you're receptive to that, then make the argument about that. Don't bring up some argument, you know what? Well, it's like they own us and they don't care about us as human beings. Why you want to get paid? You can stay home, but you're electing to play and get paid while complaining. Now, how much sense does that make? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And then the other aspect of it is that, you know, with the NBA, they can create a bubble. They've obviously did because of the size of their operation. The size of the operation for the National Football League, you can't create a bubble. There's too many people involved in each team's operation to create a bubble in one area. It doesn't exist. Like back when they used to do the rookie symposium, they would only invite, you know, draft picks because that was all they could kind of have under one roof to kind of keep them there. There's 32 teams with over 50, you know, players, plus the coaching staff, the support staffs, the film, the video. Like, it's just too many people. You can't do it. There aren't practice facilities. There aren't playing facilities. There aren't locker rooms. You don't have it. So what's your next best option? Your next best option is to try to keep each facility as safe as possible. And the stuff that I'm hearing from people that are at these facilities and the stuff that we have seen, it's kind of remarkable, the things that in the resources that are being put into, you know, keeping the players as safe as possible. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. This entire thing is not perfect. But, you know, to kind of be in this situation where you're calling out the owners as if they don't care about the well-being at all of the players, when the amount of resources being spent to try to make this as good as humanly possible, I think it takes some credibility away from OBJ. And look, in fairness to him, and I think we probably should point it out, is that he did make these comments prior to some of these agreements and heading into training camp and seeing what life was like at the facilities. But listen, I know people, and they're like, look, it's amazing what is going on here in terms of what is happening to keep us kind of clear from the virus.
Couple things. Number one, understand, because I make my living in sports and am just a sports fan, as we all are, I am actually recklessly, in a way, pushing it, saying, you know what, they can try to play football. Any sane person would say, no, you should not be playing football right now. There are too many people involved. It's tackle football. It's a talk about no social distancing. The whole point is to eliminate social distancing in football. And when you add support staff, too many people in one place. However, because I am a fan and make my living in the industry, and I am in this kind of insular bubble that we're all in, I think, no, you can do it. You can try to play football. I'm still saying that, even though I know it's probably not a great idea. But okay, let's try, right? Baseball cut its season almost in a third. Basketball had very little to go. And by the way, I still don't think they're going to finish the baseball season. Basketball had very little to go, and they created a bubble. You're right, Tim, because of the size of the operation, you just can't have one bubble. But maybe you can divvy up AFC teams and NFC teams and have four separate bubbles where you retest them when they have to go to the two different cities that you're holding each conference in. And as I said, you can do it over 10 weeks. You do 8 games. You do whatever that, you know, and then reset for the playoffs. You could have come up with a concept that at least gives you a puncher's chance. I do not think they did that. And so while you're right on the specifics of Odell, Stephen A., what I take it to mean, like what I take away from it, is that that some players at least are looking at the NFL like, you're not serious about this. You're not serious about actually getting done in a responsible way. Because, guys, what I'm suggesting also may not be responsible, but at least it's what can be done, I think.
Well, first of all, like I said earlier, speak for yourself. Call me insane all you want to. You damn right I think that they should be playing because I'm not thinking about the games. I'm thinking about the thousands upon thousands of people the game actually employs and the way it assists in stimulating an economy. Because guess what? I have said this religiously. You've known this, Max. People are not going to sit at home and wait for a check from the government. They don't expect it. They don't think it's going to happen. And they're not going to allow their quality of life to disintegrate before their very eyes. You know why the NFL is trying to conduct business as usual? To make money. You know why people want them to conduct business? Because they make money off the NFL. And that is the reality of the situation. And who's one of those people making money? Odell! He's one of the people making the money! So the point that I'm trying to make to you is this. That is going to happen. You play and get paid, or you elect not to get paid and don't play. And if you elect not to get paid and don't play, you don't have to show up. You're not endangering yourself. And that last time I checked, that is not people acting like they own you or anything. That is an employer offering you the opportunity to be an employee. You can take it or you can pass. That's what most people in the world are dealing with right now. That is the right. That is the reality.
All around the world, what we've seen.
Period.
All around the world, what we've seen is that trying to reopen because of economic reasons before you can do it safely not only doesn't help you economically, you're no better off economically, but just many more people will get sick and die. That's what we've seen so far. And so I reject the argument that there's an economic imperative to get this thing open. The best thing you can do economically is try to do it in a much more limited way that allows you to do it at all.
All right. Guys, we let this one go.
And I respect that. And what I'm saying to you is,
let me get in here.
I'm just saying to you, feel free to say that to the person that's not in the privileged position that we are in and then come talk to me because they don't feel they have that luxury. It ain't that simple to them.
You're right. People short-term incentives.
It is an economic emergency.
Short-term incentives usually trump long-term interests, so to speak.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
In the NBA, New Orleans rookie sensation Zion Williamson was elated to be on the floor at the end of the Pelicans' 109-99 win over the Grizzlies Monday. The team extended Zion's minutes to 25. He had been playing about 14. Here he is, postgame.
For the past couple of games, you've been on the sidelines watching as your team has battled down the stretch. What did it feel like to be out there with them tonight?
I feel alive again, man. My competitive spirit was there. And, you know, I'm glad Coach and the whole team trusted me to, you know, finish the game out.
All right, that was our Malika Andrews, who's been doing a fantastic job as a part of our NBA coverage with Zion Williamson. Stephen A., I'll start with you here. Do you think the Pelicans are pampering him?
I think so. And I certainly think that that's how he's come across with it. Now, something's wrong. Something's fishy here. And I've been thinking about this for the past few days, Max. Now, listen, when you look at a guy like Zion Williamson, got hurt in high school, got hurt in college, got hurt in summer league, comes back after a 4.5 month layoff, seemed a bit gimpy,
something doesn't seem right, and I'm concerned about him moving forward in terms of him being a bit injury prone. But in the same breath, he's 20. And if you are the New Orleans Pelicans and you are managing him to this degree after he just had 4.5 months off, there's videos out of him on social media working out, looking like Bane from, Dark Knight Rises and all of this other stuff, muscles everywhere. You know, he's training and what have you. And then it's time to compete, to engage in competition. And in close games in the fourth quarter, he's on the bench watching because they need to be concerned. I think it's unfair to Alvin Gentry and his coaching staff. I think it's being a bit unfair to Zion Williamson, to be quite honest with you. At some point in time, you got to get out there and you got to play. And sometimes you've got to work through it. There's a difference between being injured and being hurt or sore, whatever the case may be. I've got some questions about it, but ultimately I'm going to lean on the side of pampering, thinking that that's what they're doing. They're thinking long-term, not short-term. But the dude is 20 years old. You got to let him play. If you're going to treat him this way, I mean, how is he really going to develop into that bona fide star we are all confident he will be?
I think that this is uncharted territory with Zion Williamson because we've never seen a guy like Zion Williamson. I mean, his sneaker explodes in college. I always go back to that. Because when have you seen 280 pounds that could stop and start like that? You know, it's like putting like Derrick Rose was a truck engine in a little race car body, and you can see why there's too much torque and speed. Like the human skeleton can't handle it. But Zion's kind of like that in 280 pounds. So what's that? A jet engine in a truck's body? Like, we don't know what this is, and neither do the Pelicans. This has never existed before. He's one of a kind. And so I think I understand they're thinking discretion is the better part of valor here, right? Like, or rather, err on the side of caution here, because this is their franchise player. They have talent on the team, but not like this. This is their franchise player. He could be a complete franchise-changing kind of player, a generational talent, and certainly a unique one. So you want to be very careful. Now, I don't think it's coincidence that he played more minutes and looked better, you know, and so they let him play more minutes. I think he looked, you said gimpy, Stephen A., out of shape. And Zion might be one of these guys who has to kind of play himself into shape. I don't mean like he doesn't want to work out or anything. It's just basketball shape is different than just getting in shape, you know, off the court. And if they're concerned about the minutes he's on the court, then there's only so much he can do, kind of like Embiid. There's only so much he can do to get in that kind of shape. Then they got to play him. But how do you finesse that? You don't want it to be too much too soon. So I think the combination of the fact that he looked out of shape, at least his play looked out of shape, and they weren't functioning well as a team, kept the minutes lower. As he looks a little better, and the team functions better with him on the floor, they can extend those minutes a little bit. I will agree with this with you, Stephen. I'll agree with this point. Just like you can ruin a guy by rushing him, you can ruin a guy by holding him back too much. And I'm not suggesting that he's anywhere near ruined, but you can certainly retard his progress. And so this is a delicate formula, and I don't even think it's a formula. It's not a science. It's more of an art because it's uncharted. And I think the Pelicans are doing the best they know how and seem to be actually moving in the right direction.
I will tell you this. They played three games thus far. The last night was the first game that they won. Saturday against the Los Angeles Clippers, albeit against the Los Angeles Clippers, they looked absolutely atrocious. They looked like they didn't want to be there. They looked ill-prepared. They looked disinterested. Couldn't dribble. Couldn't pass. There was no movement without the basketball. It was one of the most atrocious performances we've seen this season. They should have been ashamed of themselves. They really should have been. But they had that previous game, they had only lost by a couple of points to Utah. I'm thinking along the lines, you're at the bubble. Why are you at the bubble? Because you were one of the teams in the playoff hunt, and you are trying to compete for a playoff spot. And to me, more so last night than at any other time, did they appear to be a team looking to compete for a playoff spot. That's what this should be about. Again, it's long term. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And if you want to sit up there and limit Zion Williamson to like 30 minutes or so, you know what, so be it. But you know what? He played 15 minutes against Utah. He played 14 minutes against the Clippers. If you feel that way about it, why the hell is he in the bubble? Just leave him home. Just go for the playoff spot without him.
Well, because
show up and show up without him. I mean, if you're going to play for 14, 15 minutes, that's what they did the first two games.
Well, first of all, the main kind of benefit of making the playoffs is to bring the group along together and get them that experience, right? And I agree. That's a real carrot. That's not just like, well, it'd be nice if it made the playoffs. That would speed up this process. You know, markets like this usually have 6 years to try to win a championship with a draft pick like Zion, and then they try to get to a more glamorous or bigger market, right? So the clock starts ticking right away. Okay. Here's year one. They got five more after this. Making the playoffs would be a good thing, but Stephen A., that's mainly if Zion's involved in that group, because the team will revolve around him. He's the engine. He's the star.
I agree.
He's the franchise player. And I think part of the minutes restrictions was he wasn't playing well. And more than that, the team wasn't functioning well. What were they, like minus 23 the other night with him on the floor? That wasn't the case last
year. Yeah, but they only lost by two to Utah.
He was making the team better. That's true, but he was not great. Now he's making the team better. I think you will see the minutes expand. But even this is a delicate formula. You don't want to risk the health of your franchise player at the altar of making the playoffs this year. But it is good for you to do it. This is a delicate situation the Pelicans are in right now.
They had a game March 8th. Their next game was July 30th, which was this past Thursday. That's more than 4.5 months. If you have to be concerned about his health after a 4.5 month layoff, where you literally have been bragging during that whole pandemic situation that had the NBA season suspended, if you're bragging about the condition that he's in, how he's in the gym working out every day, how he's healthy and ready to go, and then it's time, and what we see is 14, 15 minutes because you are safeguarding everything, either you're being a bit paranoid or there is something wrong with Zion that we don't know about. Because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, what's your guess, Stephen A?
With his talent, just 15 and 14 minutes. It don't make any sense. Especially against Utah, Max.
What's your guess?
Down the last 7-plus minutes of the game. I think there's something a bit more wrong with him. That's my guess.
That's what's going around. You can read it online. You can hear it on podcasts and stuff. That's what's going around. There's a sense that maybe there's something wrong that we don't know about, that they're not telling. Usually if it's a hamstring or something, they'll just say, yeah, he's got a little pull. We got to be careful with it. So people are suspecting or theorizing maybe it's more serious. I think most likely from what I've seen so far, he's the kind of guy at his size who has to play himself. They have to play him into shape, and they're being careful.